Did you notice in that hymn we just sang, the phrase, riches I heed not, nor man's empty praise? Frankly, I've never been able to sing that line with any honesty at all. And wait a minute. Say it the way it's written in your hymn. The original. Riches I heed not, nor man's empty praise. When the new hymnal was being developed, the sex ethics experts had to eliminate man because that was sexism. Now, they could have put in folks. Riches I heed not, nor folks, empty praise. That would have fit, and it would have been perfect. I, for one, like praise from women as well as men. In that area, I am totally without prejudice. Just so it comes. But those experts, taking out man, didn't put in folks where it belonged. They put in vain instead. And you sang, riches I heed not, nor vain empty praise. Now, why they put in vain, I don't know. I mean, folks would have fit. And they put in vain. Maybe they wanted to make vain praise even worse, so they added vain. Vain, empty praise. As if no one wants it. I like it. And so do most of you. You know, if children do not get appropriate praise, they can't even develop a good self-image of themselves. It's important praise. I don't know why they knocked it. I'll let you in on a preacher's secret. Don't take this beyond here. When ministers go to the back of the church after they preach a sermon, they claim it's to greet people. To welcome them. And there's some truth in that. I believe that's why they go back there. But a few words of praise for what was heard in the sermon, some irritation that you had even, that you wanted to discuss as you walked out, that matters a lot. Riches I heed not, nor folks' praise. Nonsense. There's none of us that doesn't like praise. Now, as for riches I heed not. I have this app right here on my phone. You can punch it, and it sums up all my investments. Tells me right up to the moment what I'm worth. Oh! I shouldn't have said that on Sunday morning. I know that. Isn't it interesting? We can say that during the week. This is what I'm worth. But on Sunday morning, we're meant to talk about our worth being based in the love of God has revealed in Christ. And I believe that. I do. But I have this app. And it tells me what I'm worth. Said it again. I got to stop. Riches I heed not. Come on. I have a pension from the Presbyterian Church. It's a very good pension. It was made so by, that's another story I'll tell you some other time. It forms the basis of my retirement, that and Social Security, the pension and the Social Security. And I will give of that pension 20%, but not all of it. I mean, the rest of it is, you know, there's that hymn that you sing here, it's called Here Am I, Lord. Whom shall I send? And we're standing up, and many of you raise your arms, hands, and say, Here am I, Lord, send me. Send me. Well, this is just my interpretation of that hymn. It may not be yours, and that's okay. We can agree to disagree. But my interpretation is that when one is sent, one offers everything to God. Here am I, Lord, send me everything. My entire pension. Well, I don't know about you, but a 10% will do nicely. Thank you. I guess I'm a 10% Christian when it comes right down to it. That line, riches I heed not, nor folks praise, who's kidding who? We all know what I'm talking about, don't we? And yet there's something that tugs at me, to be more than a 10%er, tugs at me to find a foundation rooted in God, in what the choir just sang about, instead of in riches and praise and all the things that I want, and you and I want, most of us. Something tugs at me. I've known people whose life was rooted in a foundation in God. Not like me. Not like 10%ers. Mary Catherine Boettcher. I told you about her before, but this time it's a different ending. Mary Catherine Boettcher. There was a man in her subdivision, Ponderosa, a fellow church member of this place, who went insane one night. Crazy. He got a gun, he shot his wife, wounded her, didn't kill her. And then the rumor had it that he was wandering the streets of that subdivision with his gun, ready to shoot people. The rumor was actually wrong. He'd shot himself, and he was already deceased. But the rumor swept Ponderosa. And people went and got their guns, if they had guns. And if they didn't have guns, they turned off their lights. They turned off their lights and sat in darkness, hoping that the man with the gun would not come into a dark house, except one house. In Mary Catherine Boettcher's house, she turned on all her lights and put the tea kettle on. And she said to me, I wanted him to know in that sea of darkness that there was one house that would welcome him, a friend, a fellow churchman. I wanted him to know that there was one house where he was welcome, even if he had a gun, no matter what he'd done. Now, a friend of mine, a very good friend and a very sensitive person, heard the story I told the first time, that story, here. And he said to me afterwards, that was ridiculous. That you praised a person who didn't do the sensible, wise thing. If she had a gun, she should have got it. And if she didn't have a gun, she should have turned off her lights. That would have been smart. That would have been strong. That would have been wise. And she was foolish. And you praised her. And that was foolish. And from any human standpoint, my friend was correct. But there's a line in the letter to to Corinth from Paul wrote, where he says, the weakness of God is stronger than humankind. And the foolishness of God is made wiser than humankind. I think Mary Catherine Betcher that night was acting foolishly and weakly as we know it, as we would do it. Most of us here would either reach for our gun or our light switch that evening. But I think Mary Catherine Betcher somehow breathed the foundation in God, whose weakness became strength and foolishness became wisdom. She turned on all her lights in that dark neighborhood, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot put it out. And that tugs at me. Even if I'm a 10%er, it tugs at me. Then there was a man in Connecticut named John Mannix. There was a program in the state of Connecticut called Project Concern, which said to the suburban folks like myself that the state would pay to bus kids from the inner city, Bridgeport in this case, into our school to fill our empty desks. Not one kid was going to be changed, not one kid was going to be bussed out. It wasn't going to matter at all, except the empty desks of our school would be filled with slum kids. And John Mannix, a car dealer, the only car dealer in the whole community, he was strong to support that, along with myself and some others. I met him one day on the street. I said, John, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? It's not going to matter. My people think I'm a kook anyway. I mean, they're not going to be upset with me being for it. But you sell cars to people in this town. Cars. And they're going to go elsewhere to buy their cars. You're going to lose a lot of money, John. Why are you doing this? And he said to me, Stuart, you of all people should know, we're not here to make money. It was almost as if he said, riches I heed not, nor folks' praise. My foundation is in something else. My foundation's in Christ. We'll bust those kids into our schools, into our empty desks. And that tugs at me. Even though I'm a 10%er, even though I don't raise my hand only a little bit, it tugs at me. Then there was Lillian Kreth, a woman in my first church, way back in New York State. She lived from paycheck to paycheck, single parent. Had two wonderful boys, Ernest and Gordon. Ernie was in college, Gordon was in high school, and the leader of our youth group in that small church. She was on paycheck to paycheck kind of person. But she fed her kids well, and she dressed them well, and she saw to it that they prepared themselves well for life. She's a marvelous parent. One 1 week, she went on the night shift. Made her life much more complicated. I said, Lillian, why did you go on a night shift? You already scraped by. Why did you go? She said, there's a kid. He's just a teenager being tried in the court, in our courtroom. And there's nobody there but angry people who want to see him done in. Nobody for him there. So I went on a night shift so I could go and sit every day in that courtroom quietly where he can see me, where he knows there's one person who cares about him in the courtroom. I said, is he innocent? I don't know if he's innocent or guilty, but I think he's going to be convicted. But it doesn't really matter. It does really matter. He's just a kid all alone in that courtroom. And he needs someone there sitting where he can see them, who cares about him. So I go every day and sit there where he can see me. And Jesus said, you who've done it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, have done it to me. I don't think I'd do what Lillian Kreft did, but it tugs at me. It tugs at me. The foundation which is in God. Of course, there's something else in this religion of ours. Not only us searching for God, searching for a foundation that's rooted in Christ, but God, whatever we mean by that, word, mystery, presence, spirit, creative power, something reaching out to us. That's the other side of it. That's it. That's the God we know in Christ, dancing into our lives, inviting us, even the 10%ers like me, and maybe like you, inviting us to join the dance. Stand and sing the reform. Dance then where you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, and he and I'll lead you all wherever you may be, and I'll lead you all in the dance, and he. Our morning offering.